accession number 18560, Reel 6.
Simpson Reel 6.
And, I said, he wants to tell them the truth. I said, but he hasn't seen what we've seen. So, Bacardi says, well, you better tell the Colonel then what it is, or I'll tell him. I says, no, I said, it's no good you telling him. I said, it's hearsay. I said, that what I say and you tell him is hearsay. So I went and called in. Well, sir, I says, told him the experience of the farmhouse and the pig and the sighting that we had of the enemy lighting a match and lighting cigarettes, and we estimated the distance from the farmhouse, I said, which we didn't go into in case it was a German headquarters, being the proximity was so near of men smoking that that may have been a headquarters, so we wouldn't go and expose ourselves. We'd come back and we'd assume it was the headquarters and occupied. He says, yes. I said, this enemy movement, I said, it doesn't seem as though they're preparing for the counterattack. I said, what impressions I get is that they're digging in defensive positions and the motorised or track vehicles are heard in the distance, slightly behind them, and that would be there as support, defence, in case they're being attacked. He says, right, that'll do. So then they went back to a slit tent on the bomb site and slept for the remainder of the night. And I asked Captain Rudd the next morning, I said, what was the bloody idea, I said, what you did like yesterday? Well, he says, you're away that long. He says, I won't wait no longer. I says, you won't wait no longer. There was no firing, no nothing, no shout, no nothing. No exclamations of surprise. He said, I just, not heard you been away a good while. I thought I'd come back, which I thought was wrong. Well, I said, as far as I'm concerned, don't ever do that again. Don't ever do it again. And like that. Well, then they went out the following morning. They went out on the patrol. And I took a section with me. And we met a German patrol coming up on the field. We saw them first, they didn't see us. And we opened up on them. We shot and killed a lot, with the exception of one man, their leader, whose name was Wilhelm Schwarz. Wilhelm Schneider. He was a corporal. We left her. We came on the way back. I said, just to my mates, I said, well, I wonder if we killed them all or what. I said, we opened up on them and off. I said, we better go back and have a look, see if there's anybody still living. Anyway, I went back, and the Corporal Schwarz was living, but he's badly, his stomach was open, his intestines were out, but he was still alive, and the remainder were dead. So I pulled out a shell dressing and placed it on his wound and put his hands on top to hold it best I could. And we placed it. We came back for the stretcher, got a stretcher. I got one of the chaps to come with me. We put him on the stretcher and carried him back. Stopped outside the entrance to the malaria station, which was a headquarters. The Germans must have seen us. One of his OP must have seen us. So he started mortaring and shelling us. He was dropping right where we are. The poor old Schwarzer there. I thought, what the hell? Our assistant lads. I said, come on, give us a lift of him into that ditch. But nobody would help him. Nobody would give us a hand. I said, right you are then. So I just laid across him in a press-up style. You know the press-up style? I laid across him, hoping that he wouldn't be it, and hoping I wouldn't be it, just to give a bit of reassurance that it'd be all right now, because he was dead now. He was severely wounded. He couldn't harm us. When a voice from the wind is, "Are you Simpson?" I looked over at the colonel. I said, "Yes, sir." "If you're on for a bloody court martial, this is doing that." I said, "Well, they can't do no harm to us now, sir." I said, "This poor bugger," I said, "his guts are hanging out." Anyway, that was left. Things died down. We called the our RMO to get the medics up. Tried to 1500-weight truck. We put him on that and they took him away. Anyway, when the truck came back, I says, "How was it?" He says, "No," I said, "he died just before we got in to the ambulances." And that was one poor old devil. Well, things went on then, round about Jabini. Patrolling and the enemy patrolling. And then, it was the very first time I'd ever seen dogs used in the front line. And we didn't realise what it was at first. We saw this dog approaching. And he came and he's moving from side to side. Latterly, stopping, looking, turning his head, and then started his movements again. But each time, he's coming in a crisscross fashion from, say, a point here and a point there. Oh, what the hell is this? He's acting strangely. What the hell is he doing? Well, then he came back to a point whereby he was more or less centre to us, laid out in position, the platoon. And he stopped for a while, then walked up and down, and then buggered off back again. Well, a short while after, he'd gone back out, and we kind of watched him with the binoculars. Then this bloody stunk came down. Stunk was what a utterly stunk. It wasn't long, it was just a stunk. That's bloody funny. Then they started again. So you know how you are when you sit down and sit looking at one another. How the hell did that happen? And they're discussing this dog and putting time limits between seeing the dog and the times the shell fell. We come to the conclusion that they're using the dog as a bloody reconnaissance. Ingenious buggers that they are.
Well, how did it work?
They were watching the dog. But the dog, they must have had some system and taught the dog, when it sniffed them out, sniffed its enemy out, what it was looking for, to stop so a distance from them and patrol left and patrol left, still keeping them in a smelling distance. So they got the width of your layout, they got your centre. The dog went back and then they just... one bomb ranging, if it fell on you, all well and good, they opened up like hell. That's the only way we could put it. But we saw them after as well. You see, that was the first time we'd seen it happen. But we saw it in later battles.
Could you not have shot the dog?
Well, we could have done, but we didn't think any of it. We thought it was a stray at the time. You see?
What kind of dog was it?
Oh, I don't know. It was a big black one with an odd spot of white hidden there. It wasn't an Alsatian. And it wasn't a boxer. Something like a sheepdog. That was something like a sheepdog to look at. Well, then, just after that, a few hours later, we saw movement between the aircraft, the blast walls, dodging from one to the other. And they were pretty close to us. I think the nearest one might be, for example, as near as that house is opposite, you see. And they were attacking us, but not infantrymen as such. They were infantrymen, but they carried a machine gun. And three of them on one machine gun, already mounted on a tripod. One man carrying a tripod behind, he was the number one. We didn't know that, we found out when they started firing. He was the number one. One man carrying reserve ammunition, and number two was a feeder. As soon as they saw you, they dropped and opened up right away. The man that was carrying the two legs behind just opened up on you right away. And as they came out from this wall, we opened up. He dropped back and that was it. Opened up like hell of us. Well, we were on the bomb site. We were bloody shit scared, so to speak. Sat on top of bombs. Anyway, they stopped and they started deploying to their left, their right, our left. Well, I had one position point, Sam Dougie Ingalls and Colonel Lawson out there on a machine gun post on our extreme left flank. That was in amongst some trees, olive grove or something like that. I thought, well, listen, bugger, if he gets down there, he'll start sweeping up our left. You see, because there's no position. And the next thing I see is Cottle Lawson and Dougie Ingalls buggering off back towards the main road instead of coming towards us. Oh, I says to hell with this, come on, just withdraw from here for a bit. So we pulled back slightly towards battalion headquarters, and then battalion headquarters gave us orders to withdraw completely, form up on the road and off down, because everything was in such bloody chaos. The Argyles and the first Black Watch had their own attacks thrown at them. We were lucky. We just got the fringes of it. Anyway, we compelled back, and I just forget where we went. A good few miles back we went. We were going down the road. Oh, we'd be about, 4 or 5 kilometres away down the roadway. The carriers, we went last. We came last as rear guard, as the infantry in front. I say, they managed to get the transport up and get into transport enough like hell. And of course, we could put a foot down then. Then we had such a bloody row behind us. And they'd blown these bombs up. God above, what a noise it made. But then they started shelling where the battalion was going to assemble. I do believe I'm right in saying that CKMS Ramsey, I just forget which company it was, he was with at the time, but he was cooking a meal further back. Well, to where we went, he was cooking a meal there for his men, his company, to bring forward that night. When he was hit by a shell and blown to bits, and all the cooking equipment and everything. He was a loss, because he was a great chap. Well, from then on, we started moving out with the Americans on our left, in the centre of, more or less the centre of Sicily. We moved up towards Ramacca and Mount Etna, skirted Mount Etna, and carried on up through Palermo and came into Messina, which was the finish of the campaign in Sicily. We stayed for a while in Messina in the valleys and up in the olive groves, and we watched the we sent a composite invasion force from our battalion to Reggio di Calabria across the Straits of Messina.
Did you go?
No, I didn't go there. I was with the carriers waiting for the 5th Division to come up. The 5th Division came through Messina. Came through Messina, yes, to the harbour and then floated across to Reggio di Calabria. Then we were ordered to go out on a patrol up the valley that we stayed in.
Where's this?
Messina. The valley that we stayed in Messina, in the olives and vine groves, was a small village, a few houses at the top, right at the top of the valley. You're climbing all the time. And we had to go on a patrol up there, because we'd had word that a corporal of ours, a battalion corporal, had been killed. We thought, that's strange. But his body had been found. And I don't know whether he'd been shot or he'd been knifed. But he'd been killed. It was Corporal McNabb. That was it. We were pulled back then. From there we went to Catania. But we'd had some pretty good news from Martino when the campaign had finished in Sicily. We'd heard there's a rumour going around that we were being assembled to in Catania, and then we will leave, a date not given at the time, we'll leave Fort Augustus to come home. And that was it. We came home, landed at Liverpool. I and my platoon was left as rear party on the ship. I don't know what ship, we had no name that we came back on. It was just an American ship. Pretty well accommodated. Food and whatnot was pretty good. But we landed.
So you just landed at Liverpool?
The battalion embarked for the south of England to Piper's Wood Camp in Buckinghamshire. I was left behind with my platoon as a rear party to supervise the unloading of battalion stores. But that was ridiculous because we weren't allowed to supervise the unloading of the stores. The dockers did that. But I was so concerned about the way they were handling the stuff, especially when it came to what the quartermaster had brought back, G1098 stores, and which comprised of some weapons and compasses, watches. And they also brought back with him a load of cigarettes that were issued out there, 50 a week. And he thought, well, when men were killed, you see, they weren't issued, we couldn't issue them at that time. So he saved them, knowing full well they came home with really short. And some of the boys had bought turkeys from the American sailors on the ship. There were souvenirs for turkeys. They had it on a waggle, but we weren't there to question them because we were going to get Anyway, these turkeys and whatnot, and the operators were unloading at the ship, the dockers. They had a system whereby a signal, I couldn't understand the signals then, just then, until later. The man below, having loaded the nets, anything that they wanted dropped off. They were put on in a loose manner. And the signal to the crane driver, the hoist driver, whoever it, whatever it was, he had a signal there. And on lifting the net, when he was given this signal, he gave a jerk of the net. So what they wanted dropping was dropped off. And anything that dropped off, a number of men ready to rush forward, pick it up and take it back and put it in the hold, you see. Well, I was a bit doubtful about this. What the hell's going off here? But I did find out from the dock police that was a system they worked for. It was they were free, you see, when it burst open. They could keep when it burst open. The same thing happened to sides of beef and whatnot that were unloaded from the ships. On the dock side as well, that was taken away ad lib. And they had their own butchers in there, cutting it up in the joints. Well, I complained. They were doing it with the turkeys, but I got away with that because I played bloody hell. And we got all the turkeys back. But enough, we finally left the ship unloaded. Everything was intact. They did manage to get one or two things. But I just took a note of it to inform the captain, quartermaster, Captain McKechnie. And we got the train then to join the battalion down in Piper's Wood at Southwood in Buckinghamshire. We were stationed in Buckinghamshire for quite a while, mainly resettling to home counties and re-administration and a drawing of new equipment and stuff. And the weather, we were training, heavy training on manoeuvres and route marches to keep fit. We had carriers, we got the carriers, a new set of carriers. And we went to, I had to go down and take the drivers with me to the Ford in Dagenham for some new carriers. We got them and brought them back. And then I was sent down to get some Cardinal Lloyd carriers. I forget where we went for them, but it was more or less on the same route. But the Cardinal Lloyd carriers were tiller-bar steering, whereas our carriers are the normal steering wheel. Well, I could drive a tiller, manhandle the tiller-bar steering. I'd been trained on that. So I had to teach the lads to drive these carriers before we could set off back. Which eventually did. They had a track there, down at the factory there, they tested the drivers and said, "Okay, Sir Simpson, you can go." Well, we'd rather laugh coming back. Big Jim, my mate, I said, "You take them up." I said, "We're in a congested area, so if they go back," and the amount of traffic, well, it was more mainly military traffic, and then trying to find a way in the congested areas, a bit of a devil. And we found ourselves on a big wide road and we stopped for a while to check on the map, and it was Windsor Castle. It was a big wide entrance to it. Ah, sister, hell with this, we're not turning back, we're 20 on bloody carriers. I said, well, just carry on during this older place. So I found another road that we got, went on. It's brought us back to Amersham. We went through there, and some of the carriers went on the grass verge, just turned a bit of it up, you know, but nothing to argue about. We got back that night, and then we heard that on the same road that we'd been on, a British aeroplane that it was damaged, he landed on the roadway and finished up. But that's nothing. It was just an incident that happened. We were in Piper's Wood camp for a while at Christmas time. He came home for Christmas. The Englishman came home, or those that lived in England, he came home at Christmas. And we had to get back for the Scots lads to take their leave. And one or two men that we had from the Isle of Man, they went along with the Scots people as well, home on leave. But then, on coming back from leave, we really started intensive training. We'd got all our new equipment. It was all supplied with us, what they called a war establishment, with the Bren gun carriers, were machine guns and weapons to maintain to a standard, a high level standard. Route marches, we marched and marched 15, 40 miles at a time. And then on one of those route marches, we were rather startled by a plane. It was all yellow. It came from behind us. Of course, we were so used to planes coming, you know, but this plane had a different sound with it altogether. Before we knew where we were, it passed overhead in front of us. We're going like hell. And it was one of the first jets. It really surprised us, because what a boom it got. We thought, oh hell, if that's what we're coming up against, no bloody chance. But we were informed then that it was one of ours, it was on test. It was only then that we learned that we'd got the jet, but they weren't on active service at the time. We're now back in camp. It was fairly good camp. We're in Nissen huts. Fairly warm they were. The food was excellent, and the naffy supplies were good. We had a big naffy in the camp. The only trouble was from the roadway. The roadway was a hard standing roadway that we were on, but travelling to our Nissen huts, it was full of mud paths, whatnot. So I put the lads on collecting stones and laid the paths, which was a good pastime, because it was a pastime which was it enhanced our knowledge of doing that for when we came to France, when we went there a while later, which was a good thing, and a good point in a way. Well, having stayed at Piper's Wood Camp for a while, we went on the courses to